I want you to just picture a scenario for a moment. It's a great setup, really. You finally bought a commercial space, a shop, on the ground floor of this sleek, modern building.
Right. Prime location.
Totally. It's near the water. Above you, there are three floors of luxury apartments, and I mean the full package. Swimming pool, a fully equipped gym, fancy lifts.
Sounds like a fantastic investment. You got high foot traffic, nice area.
Ideally, yes. Until the bill arrives. You see, you open your mail, and there's a demand for thousands of dollars. They want you to pay to repair the pool heater, service the gym equipment, maintain the lift.
Okay.
But here's the kicker. You are legally explicitly banned from using any of them. You can't swim in the pool. You can't work out in the gym. You aren't even allowed to set foot in the residential hallways.
So you're being asked to subsidize a lifestyle that you are completely locked out of.
Exactly. And when you complain, the neighbors upstairs just say, too bad. We're all in the same building. We share the roof. We share the costs. Does that sound fair to you?
It sounds incredibly frustrating. But if you look at how mixed-use developments are set up, retail on the bottom, residential on top, this is a huge friction point.
It really is.
And it forces us to ask a really fundamental question. Does sharing a roof automatically mean sharing every single bill, no matter who actually uses what?
That is the central question of today's deep dive. We are unpacking a fascinating legal battle from Western Australia that completely flips the script on how these buildings are managed.
Oh, this one's a classic.
The case is Poland Superannuation, Poety LTDV, the owners of Dolphin Apartments Mandura. It was handed down by the State Administrative Tribunal in late 2022.
This case is just an absolute goldmine. If you own property, if you manage a strata scheme, or even if you just enjoy seeing a little guy take on a massive bureaucracy, you're going to love this.
It really tests the definition of user pays, doesn't it?
It does. And it all hinges on some incredibly specific legal wording that ended up saving the shop owner a fortune.
But it's not all good news, because while they won on the law, they failed, I mean spectacularly, on the math.
Right. And we're going to see how a lack of forensic evidence and a reliance on, of all things, sticky notes, cost them tens of thousands of dollars.
It's the perfect example of how to win the war but lose the battle.
Exactly. A masterclass in that.
Okay, so let's set the scene properly. We're in Mandura at a building called Dolphin Apartments. It's a pretty classic mixed-use setup. Structurally, what are we looking at?
Physically, it's a four-story building. The ground floor is the commercial zone, and that's where our applicant, Poland Superannuation, owns Lot 61, the retail shop.
Right.
There are also some car bays, storerooms down there. Then you've got floors 1, 2, and 3, purely residential apartments.
And those amenities? The pool and gym?
They're located on the first floor. So physically, they are sitting squarely in the residential zone. You'd have to leave the shop, go into the residential lobby, and then head upstairs just to see them.
Okay, so the conflict starts brewing because the shop owner, let's just call him the applicant, gets fed up. Around January 2021, they just stop paying their strata levies.
They go on strike, essentially.
Yes. They just said, I've been overcharged for years. I'm paying for the pool, the lift, the cleaning of hallways. I can't even walk down. I'm not paying another cent until this is fixed.
Right. Now, usually, if you stop paying your bills, the strata company, which represents all the owners, comes after you. Hard.
And that's what happened here. Before they could even start arguing about the pool, the strata company tried to kill the case on a technicality. What was their move?
They used what I call the debt defense.
Yeah.
The strata company went to the tribunal and said, look, this isn't some complex legal dispute. This guy just owes us money. It's simple debt collection.
And why does that distinction matter, a debt versus a dispute?
It matters because of jurisdiction. Under the Strata Titles Act, the State Administrative Tribunal, well, it isn't supposed to be a debt collector. If it's just an unpaid bill, they toss it out. You can go to a civil court. So the strata company was trying to get the case dismissed before the shop owner could even open his mouth about the unfair charges.
It's a bullying tactic, really. Pay up first, complain later.
It often is. But the tribunal member, Missy Barton, she didn't buy it. She ruled this was a scheme dispute, not a debt case.
So she saw the bigger picture.
Exactly. She saw the applicant wasn't just refusing to pay. They were challenging the validity of the levies. They were asking for a legal declaration on how the bylaws should be interpreted.
That's a huge win right out of the gate. It meant they could finally talk about the bylaws. And this is where the story gets really interesting, because the bylaws in this building were, let's just say, a bit of a mess.
A bit of a mess is polite. They were contradictory. But there were two specific bylaws that became the stars of the show. The first one is Bylaw 18.
Okay, walk us through Bylaw 18. This seems to be the main shield for the shop owner.
It is. Bylaw 18 was surprisingly explicit. It stated, in black and white, that the owner of Lot 61, the shop, is exempt from contributing to costs for the lifts, the swimming pool, and the gymnasium.
Wow, so it's right there.
Right there. It even went a step further and mandated that the Strata Company create separate cost centers.
Cost centers. So basically, just separate buckets for the money.
Exactly. One bucket for retail expenses, one bucket for residential. Bylaw 18 said, loud and clear, keep the money separate.
So if it was that clear, why were they even in court? If the rule says don't charge the shop for the pool, why was the Strata Company sending them the bill?
Well, the Strata Company's argument was, okay, maybe Bylaw 18 says you don't pay for the pool, but Bylaw 18 doesn't say anything about the carpets on level 3.
I see.
It doesn't mention painting the walls on level 2. It doesn't mention the roof over the apartments. They were reading the list as, if it's not on this specific list, you have to pay for it.
So the shop owner was facing a situation where they might get off the hook for the pool, but they'd still be paying to vacuum hallways they're not allowed in.
That was the danger. But then the tribunal member pulled a rabbit out of the hat. She looked at another rule, Bylaw 17-2.
And this is the prohibition rule we mentioned.
Yes. Bylaw 17-2 is very short and very sharp. It says the owner of the shop is not permitted to use any common property on or above the first floor.
So basically, stay downstairs.
Stay downstairs. You are banned.
Now,
usually being banned from something feels like a penalty. But in strata law, the tribunal realized this was actually a superpower.
How does being banned save you money?
It triggers a concept called exclusive use. The tribunal reasoned, if the shop owner is legally excluded from the upper floors, then who is left?
It's the residents.
Exactly. Hmm. The residents effectively have exclusive use of the upper floors by default. And under the Strata Titles Act, specifically sections 91 and 43, if a group of owners has exclusive use of an area, they're the ones who have to pay to maintain it.
That is brilliant logic. It's the flip side of the coin.
What if
I can't use it, you have it exclusively.
Okay.
If you have it exclusively, you pay for it.
And that changes everything. Suddenly, the exemption wasn't just for the pool and gym in Bylaw 18. The tribunal ruled the shop owner is exempt from paying for anything on the upper floors, the walls, the floors, the lights. If it's above the ground floor, the shop pays zero.
That expands the win from a few thousand a year to, well, to most of the building's budget.
Huge numbers. I mean, we're talking about 75% of the building being off limits and now off the shop's bill.
So at this point, the Strata Company has to be panicking. They're losing on the bylaws. So they try a totally different angle. They decide to time travel.
Yes, back to 2006. Is the ghost of 2006. They went digging through the archives and found the minutes from the very first annual general meeting.
And this was when the building was brand new.
Brand new. And at that meeting was Mr. Poland himself. But crucially, at that time, he was representing the developer, a company called Strzelecki Holdings.
Okay, and what did he say that came back to haunt him?
The minutes record him saying that he was prepared to be included in all cost centers for the complex.
Uh-huh. So the Strata Company says, gotcha. You promised to pay back in 2006. You can't go back on your word now. Is that a real legal argument?
It is. It's an argument called promissory estoppel.
Okay.
Basically, you made a promise. We relied on that promise. So you're stuck with it.
And it's a powerful principle.
Very powerful. It stops people from changing their minds after the fact if someone else is worse off because of it.
But the tribunal didn't buy it in this case.
No, because context is king. Mr. Poland actually took the stand and explained the situation. In 2006, the apartments hadn't sold yet. The developer still owned almost all the lots.
Right.
And the Strata manager came to him and said, we have no money in the bank. We can't pay the electricity bill.
So he was the only one with any money.
That's it. He agreed to pay into all the funds just to keep the building solvent, to keep the lights on, until the units were sold to actual people. The tribunal accepted this was just a short-term, pragmatic fix.
It wasn't a permanent contract to ignore the bylaws forever.
Exactly. So the ghost of 2006 was busted. He was just paying himself to keep the asset afloat.
Okay, so the Strata Company is 0-2, but they had one final technical weapon, the reserve fund.
Ah, yes, the reserve fund.
This gets a bit technical, so can you explain it for us? What is that?
Sure. So in Strata, you usually have two main funds. The admin fund is for daily stuff cleaning, gardening, your insurance premiums. The reserve fund is your long-term savings account for big capital works.
Like replacing the roof in 20 years?
Exactly. Or repainting the whole exterior, replacing the lift. Big ticket items.
And the argument was?
The Strata company pointed to the current Strata Titles Act, Section 100. It essentially says that while you can vary the admin fund based on who uses what, everyone must contribute to the reserve fund based on their unit entitlement. No exceptions.
So they were arguing the law forbids exempting anyone from that big savings account.
That was the argument. You don't have to pay to clean the pool today, but you have to save up to buy us a new pool in 10 years.
Which makes no sense.
That makes no practical sense, but it's how the new act is written. However, the tribunal found a loophole, the transitional provisions.
This sounds like a grandfather clause.
It is. This building scheme was set up under the old 1985 Act. The new laws only came in 2018. The tribunal looked at Schedule 5 of the new act, which basically says, if you had a valid arrangement under the old rules, we aren't going to break it just because the rules changed.
So because those separate cost centers were set up legally back in the day, they get to stay.
Yes. And they apply to the reserve fund, too. So the shop owner does not have to contribute to the savings account for the residential side.
Okay, let's just look at the scorecard here. The shop owner has won on every single legal point.
A clean sweep.
They don't pay for the pool or gym. They don't pay for any upstairs maintenance because of exclusive use. The 2006 promise is invalid, and they don't even have to pay into the reserve fund.
Legally speaking, it is a complete slam dunk.
So they must be walking away with a massive check, right? A refund for all those years of overpayments.
You would think so. But this is where we get to the part of the story we called winning the war, losing the battle.
Mm.
Because winning the legal argument is one thing. Proving the dollar amount is, well, it's something else entirely.
This brings us to the evidence, or the lack of it.
Yes. So the shop owner broke their claim into two categories. Category A were the costs clearly listed in Bylaw 18. The pool, gym, and lifts.
Easy stuff to find.
Very easy. These were distinct line items in the budget. You can look at a spreadsheet and see pool chemicals, $500, and just highlight it.
So that math is simple.
Right. And the tribunal awarded them about $20,000 in overcharges for those specific items between 2014 and 2021.
$20,000 is nice, but for 7 years of overcharging, that feels a bit light.
It is light. The real money was in category B. This was the claim for all the general building maintenance, painting, the roof, cleaning the upper floors, all this stuff covered by that exclusive use argument. The shop owner argued, since I only own the ground floor shop and the residents have the top three floors, I should only be paying about 10% of the total building maintenance.
Which makes sense. If you occupy 10% of the relevant space, you pay 10% of the bill.
The logic is sound. But in court, logic isn't evidence. To prove a 10% figure, you need hard data. You need a surveyor to measure the square footage of every hallway. You need a forensic accountant to go through every invoice for 7 years and allocate them.
And did they have a surveyor or a forensic accountant?
No. They had a witness who said he went through the invoices and found that some of them had sticky notes attached by the strata manager describing what the work was for. He used those notes, an approximate calculation of the floor area, to guess the split.
Wait. Literal post-it note.
Literal post-it notes. Sticky notes found on old receipts.
Approximate calculation based on sticky notes is not a phrase you want to hear in a legal ruling.
It really isn't. The tribunal member was pretty brutal here. She ruled that the applicant failed to discharge the onus of proof. You can't just say it's probably about 10%. You have to prove it.
Wow.
And because they didn't have a professional survey and they didn't have a forensic audit, the tribunal awarded them exactly $0 for Category B.
That is just heartbreaking. They proved the resident should have paid. They proved the shop owner shouldn't have paid. But because they couldn't put an exact number on it, they got nothing.
Nothing. The tribunal said, I can't just pick a number out of thin air.
Mm.
It highlights a massive risk in litigation. You can be 100% right on the law, but if you skimp on the preparation, you can walk away empty-handed.
They even tried to use an expert witness, didn't they? A Miss Lesser.
They did, Miss Catherine Lesser. She's the president of the Strata Community Association in WA. Very high profile, knows her stuff. But the tribunal ruled she wasn't qualified as a financial expert for this specific type of forensic accounting. She could talk about strata management, but she wasn't an auditor. So her evidence was given very limited weight.
It feels like they brought a knife to a gunfight. Or, yeah. I guess, a calculator and a sticky note to a forensic audit.
It's a classic case of underestimating the burden of proof. The applicant assumed the legal victory was the hard part. They thought, once we prove it, the numbers will sort themselves out. but courts deal in facts, not assumptions.
So let's wrap up the final outcome. What does the future look like for Dolphin Apartments now?
Well, for the future, the shop owner is in a great position. The tribunal ordered that the strata company must allocate expenses into separate cost centers permanently.
Okay, so that's a lasting change.
Yes. The shop owner is legally confirmed to be exempt from the pool, gym, lifts, and all common property on floors 2 and 3. From now on, they save thousands every year.
So as a long-term investment, the litigation was a huge success. They stopped the bleeding.
Exactly. But regarding the past, they got that $20,000 for the clear errors. But they missed out on potentially tens of thousands more because of that evidence gap. It's a bittersweet victory.
There's such a fascinating takeaway here about exclusive use. We usually think of it as a perk, right? I get this private garden, lucky me.
That's the common view. But this case flips it. Exclusive use is a double-edged sword. If you have the privilege of excluding others, you also take on the burden of the cost. The residents loved that the shop customers couldn't wander their floors, but that privacy has a price tag.
You can't have your private hallway and make the shop downstairs pay to vacuum it.
Precisely. And this applies to all sorts of situations. If you own an apartment and you have a balcony that's marked exclusive use, guess who pays when the tiles crack?
It's probably you, not the body corporate.
Usually, yes.
So for our listeners who might own a commercial unit in a mixed block or an apartment in a complex with shops, what's the one thing they need to do after listening to this?
Read your bylaws and check specifically for prohibitions. If the bylaw says you are not permitted to use Area X, that is a huge red flag that you shouldn't be paying for Area X.
And if you are paying for it, you might have a case. But if you do decide to fight it,
hire the surveyor. Hire the forensic accountant. Don't rely on sticky notes. Spend the money to prove the money. It might cost you $10,000 for those experts, but if it wins you back $50,000, it's worth it.
Just before we go, I want to leave you with a final thought. This case really exposes something you could call the paywall of justice. The shop owner was right. The court said they were right. Justice was sitting right there on the table.
But they couldn't pick it up.
They couldn't pick it up because they hadn't paid the entry fee of a forensic audit. It suggests that in these complex disputes, being right is only half the battle.
You also have to be accurate, and accuracy, as we saw here, is very expensive.
A sobering thought for anyone looking at a legal battle. Justice isn't just blind. Sometimes it's got a very high cover charge. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
We'll catch you on the next one.